Food on Friday now. It's time for that on Bush Telegraph, our second last one for the year, really. And a story today for those of you who love gardening. I've got to say my approach is best described as uninformed, tentative, even troglodyte. For example, I tried to plant some tomatoes once. They completely failed. But when I threw out old tomatoes that had gone off in the compost, they thrived. Do you know that feeling? My guest today has a far different approach and is rewarded by a year-round bountiful harvest. He's organic gardening guru Tim Marshall. He's here to explain the evolution of organic gardening methods from his new book called The New Organic Gardener. And Tim, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Michael. Pleased to be with you.
Well, I hope you can help me and many other people out there today, Tim. I feel like a basket case compared to what you seem to get up to year in, year out, week in, week out.
Well, you know, most years the best tomato I grow just comes out of the compost, regardless of what I plant.
See, so, I feel better already, Tim. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Before we get into what the term the new organic gardener is referring to, can I talk to you about your upbringing? Because I was reading with interest the kind of influence your dad had on your approach to soil and plant life.
Yes, I came from on the land background. It was more sort of gamekeeping than farming.
Gamekeeping?
My grandfather, my great-grandfather were both head gamekeepers on the largest privately owned estate in England, not in the UK, but in England. And if it hadn't been for the Second World War, my father would have inherited that job, and either myself or one of my brothers would have gone on to do the same thing.
So your dad ended off going into other areas, I think, in terms of making things. He was kind of like an engineer or something, wasn't he?
Yes, he, he actually worked on the Bristol Airplane Company. He became one of the first people to use titanium. But in fact, he really always wanted to be a gardener, and gardening was his hobby. And gardening was also very important for feeding a very large family.
Oh, right. So you've had that whole self-sufficiency drilled into you from an early age.
Yes. And of course, I had the good sense to come to Australia when I was 3 and a half. But in those days, of course, most people had some sort of productive backyard. At least they had chickens or a potato patch or something. And we had that a little even more so than most people. In Adelaide, of course, we're blessed with gardens that are resplendent with fruit trees. And it was quite a normal thing in those days. You produced a portion of your own food.
I know, and isn't it amusing? I find it constantly amusing that, you know, the new wave sweeping through suburban Australia is to go out there and grow your own, as if it's this fantastic new trend sweeping the globe. And what we're doing is just returning to the past.
Well, yes, of course, in those days, if you wanted something that was a bit exotic or slightly early in the season or something like that, growing it yourself was a very good option because we didn't have efficient transport systems. And while those transport systems are absolutely wonderful now for a diversity of diet and good health and nutrition, etc., of course, they have a very large carbon footprint. And going back to growing at least something for ourselves is a great way to reduce that carbon footprint. And also a great way to just start learning a little bit about the natural world and our dependence on it.
You've been coming face to face with the realms of the natural world for a long time. You've been a gardening inspector, I was reading, for 10 years. You've visited thousands of certified organic farms both in Australia and overseas. You've studied soil. You've worked at the CSIRO. What conclusions have you drawn from that life outside that you've put into this book?
Well, look, hopefully there is 35 years of learning in that book, and it's hard to sum it up in a sentence or two. But, look, I think that unlike 35 years ago, these days everyone is interested in organic. Almost everyone would want to be organic if they could. And people now see organic as being around for the long term, not being a short-term niche market, but something that will grow. And so now what we need is better information about how to make the changeover, how to actually do it. And that is actually coming along with the good science now is explaining to us how all the old, what I call the Lady Eve Balfour approach to the soil, the soil comes first attitude, is actually absolutely right and fundamentally correct.
So the science now supports what you just referred to a person we need to explain, Lady Eve Balfour.
Lady Eve Balfour was one of the founders of the organic movement as we know it today. And she was a great advocate of this view that you look after the soil and then the plants and the animals that grow from that will be healthy and we'll eat them and we'll be healthy. Now, that was her fundamental point of view. And actually, we learned that all the old techniques of organic growing that all the old books reflect and whatever, they're actually absolutely fundamental. And there is absolutely no contrary evidence at all. Nothing is suggesting to us that we should not be organic. There would be people, of course, who want to use chemicals, but they would have to acknowledge that they are better off still doing all the things that we recommend in this book.
All right, well, and Tim, I'm going to play devil's advocate here, because one of the great arguments against organic coming into play in a more prevalent way in the way we produce food in this country is that you can't produce reliable, unseasonal, constant productivity and yield with sufficient quality and appearance that supermarkets and consumers demand. How do you respond to that?
Well, I'd say that's absolutely not the case. I mean, if we try and produce well out of season, regardless of whether organic or not organic, we do use more carbon to do that, essentially. But, in fact, the most productive food production systems on Earth are all organic.
And, in fact, Lady Balfour, back in, the 1930s through to the 50s particularly, that was her sort of peak time, she was actually in the science of all this, wasn't she? She actually grew organic and non-organic side by side in the same soil and has come up with the conclusions that have now been upheld by science and yourself today.
Yes, she set up the first of what has been a number now of 25-year-long or 20-year-long trials where we've looked at organic and non-organic side by side. And what we see is that virtually every measurable parameter of that soil gets better in the organic treatment. So, even if you want to use chemicals, you would still do all the organic stuff in order to have the most productive and most sustainable property you could.
My guest is Tim Marshall. He's the author of a new book, The New Organic Gardener. And Tim, I want to ask about that new term within the title in a moment, but we've got a couple of questions coming in, if I may put these to you, from Facebook, because we did ask our audience if they'd like anything answered. And Joe asks you, how efficient are beneficial nematodes in dealing with curl grubs?
Oh, well,
just by the by.
Look, that's a very specific question, because most nematodes that live in the soil live in the roots of plants and not in and wouldn't touch a curl grub. There would be, though, specific nematodes that would infect the curl grub, and it may even be possible that you could buy those nematodes from a shop these days. But look, there's a whole new science of we've used integrated pest management and that sort of approach for a long time with macro organisms, like with wasps and ladybirds and those sorts of things. But now we're trying to do exactly the same sort of thing, but we're learning much, much more about the microorganisms, the nematodes and the trichoderma fungi and other things.
Maggie asks, how can we encourage people to plant native edible plant species?
Well, that's a great idea, and I guess it's gradually growing as people get used to using, especially the herbs. I mean, it's the pepperberries and those sorts of things that are really encouraging people to go in that direction. Mm. But I think there's a lot more potential to do that, and organic growers generally will be interested in native plants because they are of assistance in building biodiversity. You don't have to build biodiversity with native plants, but it's a really good way to do it with minimum input.
And they can be drought tolerant, and of course if they're native to that region where you're growing your garden, then it's kind of fantastic that you take on a responsibility for maintaining that local lineage, if you like.
Yes, and one thing we know as organic gardeners that we need flowering plants, right throughout the year, because a lot of the beneficials, the wasps, the even ladybirds, etc., at certain times they eat nectar and pollen. So we want to plant native plants. And a question to be asking your local nurseryman or your local Society for Growing Australian Plants, etc., how do I design a shrubbery or a windbreak or whatever I'm doing so that I can have a sequence of flowering plants? And your local native plants experts will know a great deal about how to help you to maintain that.
Tim, let's talk about what it is you mean by the new organic gardener. Obviously, you're making a distinction between new and old. What's changed over the years that we need to incorporate into the way we approach organic gardening now?
Well, I don't think there's anything at all wrong with the old ideas, but I do see that organic gardening literature simply recycles those old ideas.
Such as?
And the garlic spray. Most organic books that you pick up are going to tell you how to make a garlic spray or a chili spray. Now, that was a terrific thing to do. There's nothing wrong with doing that. It's a great thing to do. But guess what? In those days, we had an open bucket, we mashed some garlic, we dropped in the end of a hose, and we had a big old, usually a copper spray that we pumped with a massive pumping action, and you could force little bits of garlic skin or whatever through that nozzle. Now, you can go to a garden centre and you can buy a professionally made, quality controlled product that will go through the finest filters without blocking it. It's a uniform product. It's really quite cheap. And the books sort of don't reflect these sorts of changes. Now, that's only one example, and we could give many.
I'm sure you can. But, Tim, I mean, on that example, isn't there something rather lovely about growing the garlic that goes into the spray that you then put back on the garden?
Yes, but, not everybody wants to spend the time doing that. Not sure. Everyone is uniformly good. And quite frankly, some of the books tell you, for instance, they'll tell you to use washing up soap in those products. Now, there's a
professional product. Gee, you have to be careful, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. You will clog up the pores of plants and those sorts of things. There are professional products out there, which we call potassium soaps, which will do exactly the same job without any of the problems. So this is part of the idea of being new. It's incorporating the new technology and the new science, but sticking with the fundamental principles.
Well, let's talk about those core principles, which you, I think, allude to a number of times and really elaborate on within the book. Well, let's start with the first one, which seems to make obvious sense to me. Work with nature when possible.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, organic gardeners know that their techniques don't necessarily work everywhere. If you have to have the environment that's going to provide to you the beneficial wasps and the ladybirds and those sorts of things. And we also would like to work with natural seasons and cycles. Now, we can go early season and late season plants, etc. But if you choose plants that, grow in your area and in season, they'll need a lot less resources. So generally, just looking at nature and using nature as our model and looking for clues from nature.
And I think back now to one of the first commandments of the kind of life you've lived and certainly adopted from people like Lady Balfour, improving the soil with organic matter. If you do that properly, then things fall into place, don't they?
Well, basically, as organic growers, we don't have access to some of the useful tools that non-organic people have access to. So we've got to replace the function of those chemicals. And the way we actually replace the function or the services that those inputs provide is to make the soil stronger and more resilient.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good. And there's ways of doing that within your own garden system where you fold things back on themselves, but also you can seek inputs from outside the garden to improve the organic matter within your soil.
Yes, all of us are going to want to compost and mulch and recycle as much as possible, and that's part of working with nature and part of having a low impact. But then, of course, if we just recycle our own materials, then we can recycle deficiencies. So we may need from time to time to use other types of inputs.
Mm.
It's really useful early in the season when you've got cold plants and they're not working properly, you use a bit of seaweed and those sorts of things. So we've got plenty of tools and plenty of techniques now. In fact, there really aren't, if for instance in the fertility area, there aren't mysteries left to us anymore really.
You've mentioned already one of the other core principles, which is maximising diversity. But one of the ones also that I'd like to talk about is using plant selection to pest and disease, keep them down. And that's integrated pest management. Is that one of those terms you were using earlier?
Yes, although, of course, there's some interesting differences between classical integrated pest management and organic in that, and I guess the principal one is that the integrated pest managers think that they can use carefully selected chemicals with their biological techniques, and it's always been an organic viewpoint that those chemicals will do more harm than you think they will. They'll be more limiting on the system.
Look, Tim, there's other things too, like chemicals, even organic ones, using them as a last resort, and that seems to make sense to me. But for those people, perhaps, who are wanting to make some first forays into organic gardening, even now, as we approach the warmer months of the year, any tips?
Well, the first thing I'd say is get out there and do it, you know, grow something. Start just with a few parsley plants, you know, and a few spring onions. They're nice, easy things to grow. You know, books like mine are absolutely great for learning, but nothing is better than getting your hands dirty and spending some time in the garden. So start simply, be prepared to make the odd mistake. You'll be surprised how quickly these ideas will gel and things will come together.
Great advice, Tim. Thank you so much indeed. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Tim Marshall, who's the author of The New Organic Gardener and an organic man to his very core, you'd have to say. And we'll put some details about that book up on our website later today.